Hello, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How, your occupational therapist, and welcome to OT Conversations. In this episode of OT Conversations, I'd like us to have a talk and some conversation involving sleep. Personally, from a personal experience, when I was doing my training, which was more than almost 30 years ago, sleep was not yet a considered occupation. There is health maintenance activities as part of the ADLs, but sleep was not there yet. But this time around, there seems to be a lot of movement when it comes to sleep. And to this day, personally, I have not yet paid so much attention to it. And so this is my first attempt to understand sleep so that I can start teaching people, staff, students, and perhaps look at our patients on the restorative side. Maybe it is something that we need to explore. Let's first define it. Let's first understand it. What is sleep? It is a naturally recurring state of mind and body that is characterized by altered consciousness, relatively inhibited sensory activity. So when somebody's asleep, your consciousness is down. The sensory activity is inhibited, obviously. And there is also reduced muscle activity, obviously. And there is an inhibition of nearly all the voluntary muscles during the REM type of sleep, which is the rapid eye movement sleep. There is also reduced interactions with the surrounding, and it is distinguished from wakefulness by a decreased ability to react to stimuli. But it is more reactive than coma or some disorders of consciousness, and it displays very different in the brain patterns. So sleep is a process. There is lack of sensory responsiveness. There's lack of physical movement. There's lack of awareness, and very much different in terms of the wave patterns compared to coma and other problems like delirium, for example. There's a different wave in there. Coma, vigil, somnolence. Sleep is something different. It is essential for biological functioning. And why is this essential? Because there are a few reasons. When we are sleeping, there is a restoration and there is repair of the body. It is important for brain functioning. It's important for energy conversation being the third reason. And then the other one is for emotional regulation. When we are talking about some restoration and repair during the sleep, the body repairs and regenerates tissues, and it builds the bones and the muscles, and it strengthens the immune system. Okay, this is what sleep does, guys, right? Remember that. That's how important it is for the body. That's very sensible, isn't it? When in relation to brain function, sleep is important to the brain health, including the consolidation of memories, the processing of the information, and the removal of waste products from the brain. So that's very helpful to the brain as well. Gosh, I was thinking, how did people come up with this? Isn't it? And then it's also important for energy conservation. Sleep reduces the body's energy and expenditure. And what it does, it obviously helps conserve the energy and some of the energy resources of the body. For emotional regulation, it helps regulate emotions, the mood, and the mental health. So in a sense, if we look at this, sleep is important to mental health. It is important to mood. It is important in the clean up of our brain function. It's important in the repair of the body. And it is actually conserving and preparing more, what do you call this? The body to have more, to conserve energy. And when we're talking about sleep, we have two types in general. We have the non-rapid eye movement sleep, or NREM, and we have the REM, the rapid eye movement sleep. So let's differentiate the two. The non-rapid eye movement is a type of sleep, and it has three stages. And this stages is like deeper from the last. And this is technically characterized by slower brain waves, decreased body temperature, and slowed heart rate, and then slowed breathing. So the body goes down in terms of the tone, the overall tone of the body. It just slows down, and then there's one stage, and then the second stage, and then the third stage. Each stage is lower than the other. The rapid eye movement sleep, on the other hand, occurs cyclically throughout the night, and this is characterized by rapid eye movements. I have not personally observed this on myself, obviously, because I'm asleep. But I've seen some people who's had this. You can see their eyes moving left and right. Yeah. And it's happening in a cyclical way. There's rapid eye movements. There is more brain activity and dreaming. And this is essential for processing of emotions and consolidation of memories. So overall, sleep follows a predictable pattern of alternating REM and NREM. So rapid eye movement for a few seconds or minutes, and then you'd wake up again, and then you come down again. So there is a cycle. And it's in a typical night, it repeats around every 90 minutes, so an hour and a half. So you have a sequence of that, of sleep. And what happens to both the brain and the body during the sleep definitely will have a profound effect to our physical wellness and to the well-being. 90 minutes. So remember that, 90 minutes. So you remember yourself having to sleep. The best thing is if you can sleep in a cycle of 90 minutes. So 1.5 hours, some people after that, they wake up and they feel so much better. 3 hours would be fine. 6 hours would be fine. Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to occupational therapy, it is considered as a foundational activity of daily living, which I never have encountered before when I was a student. And now I'm beginning to reconsider that, yes, there is an actual sense to this. There is a foundational activity. Sleep is a foundational activity of daily living. And this is how we think of it. As occupational therapists, we see it as a foundational ADL because it significantly influences a person's health, well-being, their ability to engage on day-to-day tasks. We view it as occupational therapists, not just a biological need, but also as an occupational performance area nowadays. And it can be assessed and improved upon to enhance somebody's overall functioning and to improve a person's quality of life. In occupational therapy, we can evaluate it in terms of quality. We can evaluate sleep in terms of duration and the impact of this on their daily activities. Poor sleep can affect cognitive functions, as we said. It can affect the mood, the energy levels, physical health. And in turn, this will impair a person's ability to perform their day-to-day tasks. It will impair their washing, their dressing, their working effectively, their performance quality. That is quite true, isn't it? If you look at the ADL, say performance or work, and you're not performing at your tip-top shape and you're tired, and if you analyze, why are you tired? You didn't sleep well. We have a patient and we say, and we're assessing your ADLs or work performance, quality of performance. You can't work. Why can you not work? Do an analysis. And then the patient would say, because they haven't slept well. So there we go. So we could, as occupational therapists, assess factors that contribute to sleep disturbances, what are these things that are affecting your sleep? So the objective is for a person to have a good sleep. And what are the factors? Let's do an activity analysis. And this is where we can do our assessment. So what are the disturbances? Is there pain? Do you have stress? Do you have environmental issues? Does the person have poor sleep hygiene? Once you know these things, the interventions can include education on sleep hygiene practices, behavioral modification techniques, relaxation training and strategies, so we can do this with our patients, and modification of the sleeping environment, so change the environment. As OTs, we can also work collaboratively with patients to improve the interventions and to specify the interventions that will fit the person's specific lifestyle and needs. And when we do this, it will enhance a person's ability to engage more in their day-to-day activities. Okay? So this is so nice, isn't it, guys? So when you're thinking about sleep, yeah, sleep, it's hard to measure. You just have the hours, but you can measure it. You can describe quantifiers. There are some people, and I've listened to quite a few podcasts. There's tons out there. There appears to be a lot of evidences about sleep. This is a well-studied area. And for OTs, COPM, Canadian Occupational Performance Measure, is the tools that some people are using. I'm going to explore more on this. And then once I encounter it and I learn more about it, I'm going to talk about that with you guys, okay? Now, what you hear about the sleep hygiene, I hear about this. It's like, for me, again, new terminology, and I'm sure you hear about this, but then not a lot of people would really explore much about this sleep hygiene. Because in NHS, that's something that you don't explore. When you work in the community, that is something that you do not explore. The only way where we can address this is if a person comes to you from one person in need, seeking the advice of a solitary, autonomous, and private occupational therapist. Okay, so let's talk about sleep hygiene. What is this? It refers to habits and practices that are conducted to sleeping well on a regular basis. And there are some key hygiene practices that are often recommended by healthcare professionals. So how do you maintain a sleep hygiene? So there are some practices, perhaps maybe around 8 or so. Let's look at them. So one, a good sleep hygiene involves a person having a consistent sleep schedule, meaning going to bed and waking up at the same time every day, even on weekends. And when you have a regular sleep hygiene patterns or sleep schedule, then that is considered as one point of a good sleep hygiene. So being able to consistently sleep in a schedule or being able to maintain your schedule of sleeping. The other one is some practices is having a person needing to have an optimal sleep environment. So if your person is sleeping in the bedroom, then the bedroom should be cool. It should be quiet. It should be dark. People should be investing on good quality mattress and pillows so that they can help enhance their sleep quality. Imagine that. If you're an occupational therapist, you can assess the bed. And if you can see that it's lumpy, you can then tie up with a bed company and you can propose, try this. There may be some companies that are willing to get their mattress a try. But if that is the case, then you'll have to analyze the contours of the mattress or how it adapts to the contours of the body. And that can improve the person's sleep. Even on that alone is an occupational therapy intervention. You just have to maintain the body. Because just remember, the points of pain here would be the hip region, the bony prominences, the shoulder, the neck, and the lower back. These are the ones that you need to maintain. That alongside the environment as well. So you can help design the bedroom of your clients, make sure that the lightings are appropriate as well. And you can advise the patients to limit the screen time. So you have to advise the person to avoid screens like smartphones, tablets, television, at least 1 hour before bedtime, because it will help, because these blue lights that are emitted by screens, they inhibit the production of the melatonin. So having a dim light really calms the body down and it produces melatonin. And when the melatonin is produced, the person will sleep so much better. In a way, these blue lights, they are very facilitatory in some ways, and unconsciously it triggers the physiological side of the body. And when it does, then no melatonin production, then the person will stay awake. I have encountered and I've met a lot of people that even the slightest light is waking them up. Yeah. But there are also some people who can't sleep with the lights on or with the lights off totally. And this is rather than the light, but it's more on the psychological reasons. They're afraid of something, but it scares them. Okay. So limiting screen time is a third advice. Another advice would be to avoid stimulants, which we're asking patients to limit, or clients. They're not patients because they're not sick, and they're not sick because of sleep reasons. So they're not patients, but clients. We have advised them to limit the intake of caffeine and nicotine close to bedtime, because obviously they will keep a person awake. Advising clients to watch their diet. You advise them to avoid heavy meals, spicy food, sugary food before bedtime. And these type of food can help prevent sleep disruptions if you avoid these things. Also, drinking too much fluid in the evening can lead to frequent awakenings as well, because they had to go to the toilet. Yeah. So you have to time it. If you're going to drink a tea and you go to bed around 9 o'clock, make sure you have it way before that, 5, 6. You should have drank and gotten all your fluid intake requirement by that. Not close. Don't drink one before you go to bed, especially when you're a bit older. Because an old person's ability to hold the bladder is much less as compared to a younger person. So watching the diet, that's another advice. You can teach, or we can teach our clients, some relaxation techniques. OTs should be very good at this. How do we do relaxation techniques? So some relaxing activities can keep a person sleep, make them sleep. Reading is one that is very effective. Taking up a warm bath, doing some meditation, deep breathing, and it can help in transitioning to sleep. It's almost like a behavioral approach, but when you start to read, you're about near and ready to go to bed. There you go. So it's almost there. It's going to be an association in there. Imagine that. Or if you sit by the bed and everything's ready, you just have to have that habit, which is associated with relaxation. So some of the habits would be like neutral warmth of the bath. Oh, that is so calming. A good book. Ooh, just talking about that, I've almost self-hypnotized myself by making myself sleepy. Just me imagining opening up a book. I was like, one page and I'm down. Okay. Physical activity is a good way to maintain the health, sleep hygiene. Having a regular physical activity will help a person have deeper sleep. But it is always best not to exercise during or before the bedtime. Because when you do that, you exercise by bedtime. Before bedtime, you're just increasing your heart rate. Imagine lying down, your heart is pumping hard, blood pressure is high, you're sweating. That's not going to help. But have it in your day-to-day routine, either an aerobic exercise, walking, some activities like that. And then you can also manage worries. And this is what I'm talking about, the psychological side of things. Trying to resolve the worries or concerns before bedtime can help ease into sleep. So how do you manage the worries? Many techniques. You have to explore that with your patients. You can use techniques such as writing things down or planning on the next day or anything, really. Again, this is another podcast topic for the future. So once you practice these advices, then you will maintain a good sleep hygiene. All right. There we go. There are many other things that are out there. Some ways is like behavioral modification techniques to manage sleep. This is another approach, okay? So one form of intervention, behavior modification. How do you do this? Again, this is a behavioral modification, behavioral frame of reference. And there are some commonly used behavior modification strategies and techniques like stimulus control therapy. Wow, another big word, isn't it? And what is this? It involves training the person to use the bed and bedroom only for sleep and sex, not for other activities like reading, watching TV, or worrying. So what you want to do is to associate the bed with sleeping. So you only use it when you have to sleep or engage in that other ADL, which is sexual expression, isn't it? But if you're not sleepy, don't go to bed yet. That's one technique, okay? This is one avenue. Like I said about the reading, that's another thing. You associate the reading with the bed and then you fall asleep, okay? That's a relaxation strategy. But this is a different path, but it's one avenue that you can take. There is this thing called sleep restriction therapy. And this technique involves limiting the amount of time that is spent in bed to the actual amount of time that is spent sleeping. And what it does it creates a mild sleep deprivation and it results to more efficient sleep. So gradually the bedtime then is increased until a healthy sleep duration is achieved. I wouldn't advise this unless you are there with a patient to oversee how this is done. Because if it is a program, then you need to control the behavior. You need to follow strict rules in this. But it's there. They call it sleep restriction therapy. And see, guys, packaging, that's what it is. It's all about packaging the intervention and the approach. Is there a science behind it? Yes. Is there logic behind it? Yes, there is. Yeah? Deprive yourself of sleep. And then you're going to want to sleep after that. That's called sleep restriction therapy. Another of the behavioral intervention strategies would have been the relaxation training. And these techniques such as progressive muscle relaxation, deep breathing exercises, mindfulness. These are used to reduce physical tension, mental stress, and it can inhibit the sleep. You need to wake up your skills and abilities on how to deliver this. This is one of the very simple staples that we do as occupational therapists. Another one is biofeedback. And what it is, you use sensors that measures physiological functions like the heart rate, muscle tension, and the brainwave activity. And the biofeedback, it just teaches to control these functions and it helps induce relaxation and it can help improve the sleep. One easy one is there's this thing, the SATS monitor. So you put that on your finger and then it can measure the heart rate. and then the beat of the heart, it does that. And if you look at it, I have lots of fun doing that, but I've control over it now, so I don't need it so much. I just put it on and then I can make my heart go down. So it'll start at 89 or 80, 90, and then I'll lower it down to 60. I'll will it. And that's a good way of doing that. But then I become too cognitively engaged and then I don't fall asleep. I use it as a game. But for others, it will help. Like I said, sleep education is something that can be done with our patients. So all these techniques, they require consistency. They require commitment on behalf of the patients or the clients and the therapist. And they are always effective when it is tailored to the needs of the person and closely monitored by a professional. But nowadays, it's not occupational therapists that are doing it. Although occupational therapists can explore doing that, there are people who are making themselves to be or calling themselves to be sleep therapists. There is even a program called CBTI, and I believe this stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. Yeah, so even with that, people have packaged CBT. And then you, I think it's about $300 in some of the universities in the States to get a certification for it. But you need to know CBT to begin with. And then this one is tailored specifically for insomnia. And CBTI, this is evidence-based approach, and it treats insomnia without the medication. And how it does it, it has several components, and it addresses the person's thoughts. It addresses their emotions and their behaviors. These thoughts, behaviors, all of these that contributes to sleep difficulties. So let's break CBTI into some components. What is it? Some cognitive techniques like cognitive restructuring. So what is a cognitive restructuring? You identify the challenging beliefs, like when a person before they go to bed, like for example, people say, I must have 8 hours of sleep to function. Or if I don't sleep well tonight, I will mess it up tomorrow. So all of these unwanted thoughts, negative thoughts, the goal is for a person to replace these thoughts with more realistic and less distressing ones, okay? Start appreciating other things. Don't think about this. Negative thoughts, let go of these negative thoughts because they just don't do anything, okay? So cognitive restructuring, worry control. See, another packaged intervention, worry control session. Love it, okay? These technique helps manage the racing mind that often occurs at bedtime, and it may involve setting aside a worry time earlier in the day to address thoughts rather than before the bedtime. Okay, see, people just come up with these things. It's amazing. Worry time, 3 o'clock is the worry time. Yeah, that's when you worry. Personally, if you want to worry, if you're a person that worries a lot, then yes. Give your patient this worry time. It's called worry control, all right? That's cognitive techniques. Some of the behavioral techniques would be stimulus control instructions. And this method will help strengthen the bed and the bedroom cues for sleep and weaken them. The method of stimulus control, this method helps strengthen the bed and bedroom as cues for sleep, and it weakens them as cues for wakefulness, basically. So it's a behavioral approach, like I said. And there are some guidelines which I mentioned earlier on. You use the bed only for sleep and sex, going to bed only when you are sleepy, and then getting out of bed as soon as you are awake. Get out of bed. You only use that room associated with certain activities like sleep or having sex. sleep restriction therapy, which is what I mentioned earlier on, and then relaxation training. These are all behavioral techniques. Then you talk about the sleep hygiene, and we talk about that earlier on. It involves having a good practice, regulating caffeine, alcohol, optimizing the sleep environment. I talked about that earlier on. And then you talk about the sleep scheduling as well. So there we go. CBTI. It involves a regular session with a therapist, and the therapist will provide specific assignments and exercises, and the person having a diary, for example, and it helps both the patient and the therapist understand what's really happening. Is it effective? Yes, it's been found to be highly effective in treating insomnia with benefits that lasts well beyond the end of the treatment. So there is a carryover of this, and it is considered as a first line of treatment for insomnia in many health organizations. I don't know about United Kingdom whether there is a lot of investments on this. Something worth exploring, guys. Definitely worth exploring. But there is a lot of involvement and participation when it comes to therapist and patient involvement in here. Okay, there you go, guys. It is an interesting aspect, isn't it? What we don't have, which again, I might be ignorant with what I haven't, whom I haven't encountered, is a sleep therapist. But it's definitely an area that we can specialize on, just like hand therapy. Imagine that. Imagine that you being a sleep specialist, occupational therapist, or a sleep specialist therapist. That might be something that is worth exploring. I can almost picture somebody coming in, walking into a room, lots of relaxation, lots of meditation. There's a lot of assessments that you can do with your patients and your clients. You can assess the environment, the factors. There's just so many things. It's going to keep you busy, isn't it? If you like this conversation and this topic, have a discussion amongst yourselves. Learn together. Grow together. Have a debate amongst yourselves. Keep busy. Write something down about it. Make reflections. Plan our way on how we can get there. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. This is Hal, and I'm your occupational therapist. Until next time, bye.